we're still going back and forth, tit for tat, with Iran. Yeah, we fired some missiles. We did some damage, and they attempted to fire some back. We knocked out most of those. A couple got through in Jordan, but no real damage, apparently, or at least it hasn't been reported yet. Good morning and welcome. It's 9:07. Time check brought to you by Hayes Jewelers, where the answer is always yes. We call it the 9 o'clock stretch. We're going to stretch it out, and now we're going to talk to Florida Ag Commissioner Wilton Simpson. Commish, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, Bob. Things are going great.
Hey, what's the beef with Trump? Cattle producers not happy with him. Look, I'm a consumer, and the meat prices have been very, very high. I just want some relief. What can you tell us?
Well, you know, the main thing on this, Bob, and this is where we always go with farmers, and we wonder why we put our farmers out of business, why farmers leave the farm and sell their property, and the younger generation can't make a living. Anytime the price of our commodity gets to a point where they're actually making money off of it, we generally get shut down either by a really bad trade agreement, or in this case, the big fear here is not 2 or 3 months of imported beef from other countries. It is the quality of that beef, the taste of that beef, and if that turns off people from buying beef products, this won't be a 2 or 3 month problem. It could be several years before they'll come back and say, hey, this was not American beef. This was not fresh from Florida beef. This was foreign beef, and we realized we probably shouldn't have bought that, or it don't taste as well, the same standards. And so it's about dumping on our farmers and then blaming our farmers for all the growths if they decide they have to sell one of their farms. So I know that the president came out. I know he's been a big supporter of farmers in general, and I know that he loosened up some regulation as it relates to building additional processing facilities. There are 4 primary processors in the country, and that's part of the bottleneck that creates the price increase. So when you're paying a high price for beef, your farmer's not getting all of that money. A lot of that money is going to the middlemen and the processors, and we need to make that part right there more affordable for the American people. And we all agree with that. We all agree that it should be more affordable. We just have, unfortunately, the wrong target here.
Well, there's some ranchers that are doing more direct marketing to consumers, and you could buy like quarter cow, half cow, whatever the case may be, and that is going on. But I understand there could be an expansion of that underway. Can you tell us about that, and will that bring prices down for people? Because the stuff that you get now, although the quality might be absolutely through the roof, the costs are still pretty high for most Americans.
They are. And farmers, by the way, want to bring these costs down if they can make a living. Remember, the price of diesel is much higher. The price of buying tractors is 3 or 4 times higher than it was 10 years ago. 10 years ago, you could buy a decent tractor for $50,000. Today, that tractor may be $250,000. So every part of the cost structure, again, in that farming community has gone up and gone through the roof. And the truth of the matter is we do not regulate and look at farming always as a national security issue. We never say that we have to have these farmers here because we need a farmer 3 times a day, right? We need to make sure that farmers are able to survive in this country because we love our green space, right? We love the wildlife corridor, and most of that land is being farmed. And how do we maintain these things? And we have to pay a fair price for the product. And so when you evaluate that supply chain, you have to evaluate what is the bottleneck that's creating most of that higher cost. And the farmers' costs have went up, and that's part of it. But the biggest part of it is the manufacturing and producing of that food, and because of such a regulatory body around it. And yes, in the state of Florida, we're very, very proud that you have many farmers, beef farmers today, that are going direct to consumer. The consumer can buy that beef. There's a facility there in Marion County called Fort McCoy. You can buy fresh from Florida beef directly from them, from farmers in Florida. And of course, growing up as a child, we always raised our own steer. We took it to a butcher shop. They put it in the freezer, and we put it in the freezer. It lasted us a year generally. And so more and more people are doing that to bring their costs down. Anyone listening, you can look up Fort McCoy. But there's several. There's not just Fort McCoy in the state of Florida. There are several small distributors. And you can buy fresh from Florida beef. And if you get yourself a freezer and you have supply, you certainly can save money from what it would cost you in a grocery store.
Isn't beef production down overall domestically? Like, what happened? We used to produce more beef in general. Why are those numbers so low?
Well, the numbers are a little lower, right? Because it's a supply and demand deal. Because the cattle industry was losing so much money during COVID, they had put a lot of our smaller farmers out of business. And that's what happens here, Bob, is the people who get put out of business is all your small farmers. And once they're gone, they're generally gone forever. They've sold their land. Houses are on that land. And so what happens, and also in the beef industry, when you decide to ramp up numbers so that you can get ahead of the demand, it takes a year and a half to 2 years for that process to work, right? A cow has a calf. You have to raise that calf to a couple of years old before you can use that cow as a heifer and produce more calves. So the process takes 2 or 3 years, and things have been so bad prior to the last couple of years in the beef industry, it was putting a lot of those producers out of the business and cut back. And so it's a pure supply and demand. In addition to fighting that process, there are people in this country and in this state that believe that you have to eliminate part of your cow herds and sell fake meat. And to be able to, just like gasoline and diesel, people don't want to pump oil or natural gas here in the country because you're not going green enough for them, and it causes the prices to go up. Well, when you put that pressure on your farmers, you're trying to put them out of business through any means necessary, it drives the cost up. And the more that cost goes up, the more parity there would be with the fake meat, which I was very fortunate in here in the state of Florida. We banned that a few years ago in the farm bill. We are going to protect our supply chain here. We're going to continue to promote fresh from Florida. I hope everyone listening will look for distributors in their area, meat processors, and start buying more beef fresh from Florida. That's the one way that we can take the slack up. And on a very good note of that, Bob, a large part of the problem is there's a lot of ground beef that can't be gotten rid of as you butcher whole cows. Families do not need that much ground beef, so we're at a competitive disadvantage. Through our Farmers Feeding Florida program now, we are buying a large portion of that ground beef and distributing it through our food bank distribution systems here in the state of Florida. So we are not only helping, you know, the most vulnerable amongst us are through the food banks, but we're also taking a big burden off of beef producers here in the state of Florida also.
Love it. Real quick, you have law enforcement as part of the your Ag Commission. You had some arrests at an interdiction station. Tell us about that.
Yes, we've posted a couple of these in the last week. We've had arrests. We have canine units now at our interdiction stations. We didn't have those before. The legislature appropriated those year before last. Now that we have that in place, as we go around these trucks, we find drugs, and we've made two major busts here in the last week. And we do these every week, by the way. We don't talk enough about agriculture law and what they do in protecting not only our northern border, but protecting the consumer throughout the state of Florida. They're doing an amazing job under Colonel Adams' leadership. And we had two major busts. We put them on our social media page, and we're very, very proud of it because we see ourselves as a force multiplier for all the law enforcement in this state. We work not only with our federal partners, but we work with all of our partners, all of our sheriff's office and police departments around the state, as that force multiplier. And if we catch them at the northern end of the state, they don't get an opportunity to come into the interior of the state.
Good deal. Good work. We appreciate you, Florida Ag Commissioner Wilton Simpson, and we will talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you. Coming up, Tony Romo, still in a little bit of trouble. I'll give you the latest, and also a gun owner survey that you might be surprised by the numbers. I'll share all that with you coming up on the Bob Rose Show, along with Greg Cassidy right here on 97.3 The Sky. Good morning and welcome. It's the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here. It is 9:20 right now. Your time check brought to you by Hayes Jewelers, where the answer is always yes. U.S. and Iran exchanging strikes is one of your top stories. We launched some airstrikes targeting Iran-connected forces, and of course, they launched some stuff back, including targeting Jordan. Also, U.S. House passes a funding bill, so we're not going to have to worry about a fight over the budget or a possible government shutdown, at least. This should get us to the midterms. And of course, well, the fight will begin again, as we have seen historically every few months, this ridiculousness. But a tropical storm, Edward, is now a tropical depression. It's falling apart. It's still a big rainmaker. It's going to create some problems in the coastline of Texas. If you're traveling there, got family, you might want to reach out. Also, still digging out and trying to recover in Nepal, those floods, and Tibet, just absolutely awful. And then you got the suspect in the Charlie Kirk murder has pleaded not guilty as the court cleared the legal path forward for a potential death penalty trial in Utah. So you got all that stuff going on. And Tony Romo, this is interesting, okay? The legal limit in a lot of states is 0.08. That's the law in Florida. I know at one time it was 1.0,
right?
And they lowered it that threshold a little bit. But the former NFL quarterback was allegedly intoxicated at about twice the legal limit during his what they call OWI arrest in Wisconsin this past July, and they said that it was above the 1.5 number at the time of his arrest. The new detail comes out after Romo announced Tuesday pleaded no contest to the offense, saying he takes full responsibility for what happened. And TMZ previously reported Romo said that years of constant debilitating pain from football led to a dependence on pain medication. His attempts to get off of those meds eventually turned into an over-reliance on alcohol. And that's unfortunately very common amongst former athletes and dealing with pain. So speaking on WFAN show earlier in the month, former CBS analyst Boomer Esiason said that Romo's ongoing indefinite leave from his position may mean that his tenure with CBS Sports has ended. If I had to guess, he said, purely speculation given what's going on right now, I would think it's over. He may end up going somewhere else and getting things straightened out. You've got to be kidding me, right? With all the things that happens in the world of professional sports, all they do advertise their products is pretty much, well, one of the mainstays is alcohol. That's one of the big things they advertise. So can you just walk away from Tony Romo because he made an error in judgment? It's right. Not to, I'm not diminishing it in any way.
Right.
He made a terrible lapse in judgment. It didn't result in death or any injury from that standpoint, which that's good.
Right.
But you're gonna cost him his career? And no matter what, look, he's gonna land on his feet, somebody will pick him up. The guy's never gonna starve to death. He's already got millions of dollars. He earned it, he worked hard for it.
Yeah.
He played professional football at the highest level. I thought he did okay as a sports broadcaster. I mean, you can debate whether he's worth the money they were paying him.
That was a nice paycheck for that.
Yeah, and he's still got a lot remaining on the contract if, you know, they don't say that, well, he broke the contract via some sort of moral clause or whatever. Yeah. It would just be interesting because all the shenanigans, the things that go on in professional sports, all the things related to it, and in the broadcast industry at that highest level, they're really going to like throw him to the curb. I think it's just a convenient thing, honestly.
Way to get out of that
for CBS
contract?
To get out of it. Yeah. That's what I think. Yeah, because look, ESPN and others have let go of some, you know, pretty good talent and pretty experienced talent, you know, because they're trimming costs, etc. So we'll see. Like I said, I don't wish him any harm or any ill will. I just think you could turn that whole thing around and do a really good public service announcement with somebody who, you know, can say, look, I did. He's taken full responsibility for it.
Make
so
a campaign.
He can say, hey, yeah, look, even a professional, former professional football player, you know, can make a bad decision, et cetera.
Right.
Don't you get caught behind the wheel, you know, driving under the influence and, I don't know, tie into Uber or cab companies or something along those lines. That's what I'd like to see. But
I like that.
I mean, what more can he do? He pleaded no contest. He takes responsibility for it. So there'll be fines. First-time offender, I doubt there's any jail time involved in Wisconsin.
Right.
And I'm sure if there is, we'll hear about it. Statistically, we look at a lot of things, and it was John Lott. If you ever want some statistics to share with people about gun ownership, he wrote the book, you know, More Guns, Less Crime. Actually, he wrote several. That's just one of them. And he collects the stats, and he proves out his, you know, all of his theories, and he backs it up. And this is an interesting survey that's come out, conducted by Georgetown University's William English, found that over one-third of American gun owners have used a firearm in self-defense. And Greg and I were even talking about this,
yeah,
and we both agreed that we support, you know, the use of that in self-defense, but that seems awfully high of a number.
And we realize that doesn't mean anybody fired, but that still means you either drew the weapon,
yeah,
threatened to draw. I mean, that does seem high.
You think about all your friends that you know are,
yes,
into it, all your friends at,
yes,
the range, all your friends at the gun shop, all that, and you figure it'd be somewhere in the neighborhood of 3 out of 10 have had to use their gun for self-defense.
Now, I wouldn't have thought that.
The abstract shows the survey was conducted with a nationally representative sample of 51,000 people. That's a huge,
wow,
sample size.
Yes.
Yeah. In the body of the survey, under the heading Defensive Use of a Firearm, they reveal 37.6% of gun owners, or approximately 33.1 million adult Americans, have used a gun in defense of themselves, their property, a family member, or a member of their household. Now, in most cases, and this is almost 77%,
yeah,
the gun is not fired.
That seems reasonable.
So yeah. I guess, yeah, you could say you get a bang on the door, you don't know who it is,
mm-hmm,
and perhaps you're armed.
Yeah.
And they would say, okay, that's, you're using that,
right,
to defend yourself, even though the defense wasn't completely,
right,
needed.
Yeah, could be. Still a high number, though.
It is. But what's the statistics they want to jam down your throat?
Oh, you don't even need
one. It's more likely someone's going to take it away from you and shoot you.
Right. Geniuses.
9:28 on the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here, 15 minutes away from things that make you smile, top headlines, stories, and more coming up on 97.3 The Sky. Nine 35 on the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here, and it's a happy, happy hump day, Trump day. State Rep Chad Johnson in the house. How you doing, sir?
Wonderful. Glad to be here.
Hey, we're happy to have you. If things go well, you're not going to be in Tallahassee till December, but Governor DeSantis, sometimes he wants to get things done a little bit quicker. He might be calling everybody up and saying, come on in.
Yeah, that was something that slid out, I think, Monday. And it's a long ongoing discussion on AI data centers. And obviously, we've got plenty of work to do when we do return to Tallahassee. I just hope that we would go through the regular process of meeting during our committee weeks and then preparing our agenda and then moving forward with the regular general session in March.
Yeah, I know. Look, you got fundraising. You got to get out there. You got to meet the people, you know, if you want to stay in office. So that's, you got to roll up your sleeves and get that work done, too. And then, oh, I don't know, maybe spend a couple of minutes with the family now and again.
Absolutely. Enjoy the grandbabies that are here. So, you know, it's campaign season. Everyone knows that it's crunch time. It's go time. And then for us personally, Our business is in the auction industry, and it's very heavy in the fall. And so, obviously, we're going to be super busy at the Johnson household, but always very blessed to slow down and spend time with loved ones, especially the new grandbabies.
You know, it's interesting. I just had a conversation with a Florida Ag Commissioner, Wilton Simpson, who I know you know. In fact, he endorses you. And we talk about affordability. I think about food and you know, President Trump's getting a hard time because of getting foreign beef coming in here. But I know he called it a pipeline, like a bottleneck, and there's issues there. Are these things being addressed, and where do you see it from a consumer standpoint? Because I know you understand the production of it. Consumers, are we going to see lower beef prices but still maintain quality?
Great question, and I would tell you, like, to come in after the commissioner, that's like teeing up in the long drive contest after John Daly. We were blessed in this state with a great commissioner of ag. From affordability, I realize that we are all talking about, you know, the cost of any meat-based protein. Obviously, beef right now is the center of attention. But if you think about the input costs that we've incurred over the last 5 to 6 years, beef producers are not necessarily getting rich. They are barely getting by, and that's why we see people continue to go out. If you look back at the orange industry, everybody's frustrated that we don't have the oranges we have today. But we as a nation made a conscious decision to buy citrus from Brazil and Latin America because it was cheaper than the product that we were producing here in America. Now, all of a sudden, our American citrus farmers and Florida citrus farmers are no longer here, but it's because we drove them out. And so affordability for food is always, you know, paramount. It's a decision. It's something that we're always addressing. The Commissioner of Ag is always, you know, trying to make sure that we have an affordable food source. And you can't, there's not a safer food source anywhere on the globe than here in America. And so, but to do that comes at a cost, and that's where you have to value out things.
Yep, costs are going up for everybody everywhere, and they seem like they're multiplying. Let's switch gears. Flock cameras, you know, the governor came out and said, look, we're going to do away with them, at least where the state controls the right of way. What are your personal thoughts on it? What are your thoughts on the flock cameras?
It's one of those questions where if you ask me if my wife or children are missing, then heck, I probably want a flock camera on every corner of any street. When I'm thinking about what we have done in America over the last 10 to 12 years, and in my opinion, we've villainized law enforcement. And this only adds to that. A 27, 28-year-old patrol man or woman pulls a car over, and the vehicle is already, you know, belligerent because they're being pulled over for either doing something silly, careless, or stupid. And they're going to start saying, would you, you know, see me on flock camera, this, that, and the other. And that's not fair to our law enforcement. And so trying to find the balance there. I absolutely support, you know, our Constitution. And this, you know, probably is somewhat of a Fourth Amendment violation that you could just, you know, prove. So I'm glad we're at least rolling them back and pumping the brakes to find out how best to use modern day technology without encumbering or overstepping the boundaries for citizens.
Yeah, my deal with it was I was afraid that it was being abused. And of course, there's cases, they're anecdotal. We don't know how widespread it is. But if you could really limit who accesses it, you have to have, you know, something to go on. And everybody is tracked and traced in terms of having access. It's similar to like medical records and stuff. Not just anybody can go in there and take a look for a reason. And if you're in that industry, you're held accountable to HIPAA regulations. I don't know why we don't have something similar for the flock cameras, the data, and the people that, you know, once you log in, it's easy. You have a unique login code, period. And they would know exactly who logged in, what information they looked at.
I totally agree. I do. From a technology, I think it's going to be nice to have, but if you abuse any type of technology, mm-hmm. And again, you're talking to someone who is a private property rights advocate and a personal property supporter and making sure that government overreach is not exceeded. And so I love the fact that we're pumping the brakes and trying to find out what the viable and best use for these without violating anybody's individuality or their personal privacy.
Then there's the controversy of data centers. Here, my quick take is I'm not against them, but guardrails have to be in place, and they have to have the laws that they have to have teeth. The power issue and the water issue. What are your thoughts?
Agree. I think that we as a nation absolutely must win the AI battle. That is unquestionable. How we do that? You have to have data centers. Everybody enjoys having their pictures of their family and pets on their phone. That's all part of data centers. How do we do that? Is still in the working progress. The state of Florida passed laws last session on how we address that from an energy standpoint. That they, if you bring in a data center, they have to buy in and build and support the grid that they're going to pull energy from. We've also addressed some of the water issues. And so I think we continue to work on how we can utilize data centers, where's the best place to put them. But to simply eliminate them because you have read something on Facebook that you didn't like, I think is not the best practice for us as a state and certainly not as a nation.
I think there is a real propaganda threat that we see from the Chinese, and they're not going to come out and go, this is propaganda, you should hate AI. I mean, it doesn't work that way. They're very slick and smooth, and they get that information out there on social media, and you feel like, yeah, I don't want a data center near me. All the noise, sucking up all the water, and stealing my power, making my power bill go up. I mean, and that's the kind of stuff that they've pushed through in the American public. I believe right now, most people are against data centers.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That's the trend is anti-data centers. But at the same time, we all use them every day, even though we don't want one in our backyard or in our state. We absolutely thrive on them. And if it was, a matter of flipping a switch and we cut data centers off, we would all stop in our tracks because we have become so dependent on the data and the technology that those data centers serve.
Yeah, like it or not. I think more people would be for it if they could see a real positive economic impact coming back to them. And there are stories where power bills have actually gone down where they put data centers in. So that would be a good thing where you kind of share in the wealth. If you're going to put a data center in, it'd be like, okay, you're getting oil out of my area. We're all going to share in the proceeds. Something like that.
Well, that's what we're seeing on a lot of these different co-ops that are looking at them, that based on the size of the data center and all this are being developed, but it would absolutely drive down some of the costs associated with providing electricity in different areas. So there's opportunities, but right now all we're hearing is the resistance rather than trying to find out what is the win-win situation concerning data centers.
All right, last question. District 22, that's who you represent. It's mostly rural areas, and these are the areas that could get hit the hardest if they repeal some of the property taxes. The public safety sector, law enforcement, people in law enforcement I've talked to, they have great concerns about their futures, their jobs, how they're going to get paid. Do you think that Tallahassee's going to address that effectively?
So keep in mind, I've supported the discussion on property taxes, and yes, there is a concern on what happens with first responders. And I remind everyone that our counties and municipalities have grown to such that they no longer meet the basic needs a lot of times from the standpoint that they get pressurized to do so many things socially that we don't do the things that we set them up and required them initially, and that was road infrastructure and first responders. I joke about coming into Alachua County. You don't need the green sign to tell you that you've come to Alachua County. You can drive by Braille because Alachua County has chosen over the last 20 years not to repair the roads, but they've still taken in all this money. Oh. And so private property, property tax is absolutely an issue. It is a concern, and is this the new amendment the perfect answer? I would say no. But it's a discussion and a movement in the right way that we can at least continue the conversation and maybe get to where we need to be later on.
State Representative Chad Johnson, District 22. Look, we appreciate how candid you are, and we thank you for your time and coming in.
Always great to be here. Appreciate what y'all do for the community.
And you are welcome. We're proud and happy to be able to do that. 9:46 on the Bob Rose Show. Things that make you smile. Boy, that crept up on us. That's coming up next. So think about good upbeat thoughts and call in. Brought to you by Transformation Dentistry and Dr. Samantha Annis. 877-975-9825. Call in now. Even when times are tough, there's always a way to count your blessings and be very, very thankful for the things you have. And that's kind of what this segment is all about. We call it Things That Make You Smile. And we invite you to share some upbeat, positive thoughts with us. It's brought to you by my dentist, Transformation Dentistry, and Dr. Samantha Annis. So call in now, 877-975-9825. And Mike, good morning. What's making you smile?
Well, what's making me smile this morning is I watched the news and weather on West 2, and they showed 60 and 70% chance of rain every day for a week. And our Lake Owen is very, very low. I've reclaimed about 200 feet of my shoreline because of the drought, but I'm not happy about that. But also, my wife only yelled at me once this morning, so that's what makes me smile.
All right. What? That's a good, wife only yelled at him once.
That's a good day there. Yeah.
Yeah,
Mike, you know, a lot of guys wish they were in your shoes, I'm telling you.
Well, Mike, if you would have done the honeydew list, it's probably, you know, a couple of weeks old by now. She wouldn't have to, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
but deal with you in a harsh way.
You don't have to remind a guy over and over and over for 6 months. He'll get to it.
Yeah,
eventually. Yeah, the whole rain thing. It's like, yeah, if you are in an area where you need the water, your lakes are down. You know, the streams are just kind of trickling through. You're kind of, but man, it's like I mowed Saturday, and literally like by Tuesday, it was like, oh my goodness, it needs mowed again already. But we will be getting in the Florida fall, as I call it, soon, and the rain will back off a little bit, and then we won't have to mow quite so often. But it's nice and green finally. It matches the weeds now.
Well, it makes me smile. I got to, you know, finally get the boat out on the water. We got to Lake Santa Fe, and we dropped it in Little Lake Santa Fe, and you know, I was concerned about getting in and out of there. But the water was way down for a while. It's come back a bit. Well, certainly good enough for my little boat to navigate.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was just good to make sure everything's running, you know. The boat's running.
Yes.
You hate to see it sit there for so long. And plus, it was just a gorgeous day, and the water was like glass. And nice. It definitely made me smile.
Sounds fun.
Good morning, Mike. What's making you smile?
Good morning, fellas. Great show as usual. I just got off the phone with my youngest brother. He's 60 now, and we were speaking of just life in general. You know, with the other family members with their issues and health and all, this little guy, he's already had 5 stents put in. He asked me, he goes, how in the hell did that happen to me? And you guys were smoking and drinking all those years. I never did any of that. But, you know, just the conversation with him and how the family's going and everything is all bright on the horizon, and that made me smile.
I like that.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Yeah, that's the thing about genetics.
Oh, you just don't know.
You don't know.
No,
what,
and
you
within
don't know
the same
what you
family.
Got.
I know. Well, hey, listen, if you've got your health, that is something to smile about because, you know, we've seen, you've had 2 heart attacks, but your health, I mean, you don't know looking on the outside what's going on the inside, and you got to be careful and take care of yourself.
So, yeah. Yeah, you can't, don't be a typical guy.
Oh, we don't like going to the doctors. No, we don't.
It's just indigestion. It's just heartburn. I'll
be
fine.
Yeah, as he's laying on the floor, sweating profusely, going, yeah, I'm like, should we get you a ride home or something? No, it'll pass.
You know, speaking of, you know, putting off chores and stuff like that, don't put off regular examinations and don't put off not going to the doctor when you know something's not feeling right. Look, day one, anybody can have a down day.
Sure.
You get to 2 or the 3rd day and something doesn't feel right, get it addressed.
Except now I'm really paranoid. If Bob comes in, he's like, I feel a little funny today. I'm like, oh, no. Should we just call the ambulance now? It's like, I have PTSD over your heart attack.
I come in feeling funny every day, but well, that's usually because, you know, I think I'm going to get a laugh or a chuckle out of
something. Well, not that kind of funny. The ha-ha funny is good. The other
Listen, Joe Pesci.
Yeah. There
funny?
You go.
Like ha-ha funny?
Yeah.
That was a great scene.
What? Yeah, he's just one of those great character actors, though. He can pull it off.
Oh, yeah.
Amazingly
Especially
well.
When he played like the mobster kind of guys.
Yeah.
That was really good.
Don't be laughing at the mobsters now, Bob.
All right.
You don't know who's listening.
Anything else making you smile?
I'm actually doing pretty good.
Okay.
I can't really complain.
This doesn't make me smile.
Yeah, but...
Tiger Woods apparently just came out. He lost his license for 5 years after copping a DUI deal. His girl, Vanessa Trump, stands by him, though. Stands by her man. But, yeah. Look, Tony Romo's in the news for his issue with the DUI. People of that kind of wealth, it's hard to fathom that they wouldn't just call a car.
I know. You can have a driver every day if you wanted one.
Yep. All right, don't go anywhere. Because coming up next, it's The Smoking Gun, brought to you by Harry Beckwith Guns and Range in Micanopy. Time now for The Smoking Gun, brought to you by Harry Beckwith Guns and Range in Micanopy. Up to 300,000 children were born in the U.S. to foreign tourists over the last decade. So says a study and research that was giving information to Congress on Tuesday. This is being led by Brandon Gill, Republican out of Texas, and they shed light on birth tourism and how big it really is, somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 to 26,000 births a year. And some might think that's relatively small. However, it's cumulative. So you think about that, it's 200 to 300,000 in the last decade. Well, guess what? An enemy could build an army and literally walk into the U.S. as citizens, because they would be. And that is your Smoking Gun. The Smoking Gun, brought to you by Harry Beckwith Guns and Range in Micanopy. On behalf of Greg Cassidy, I'm Bob Rose. God bless you and your family. Have a great, safe day. See ya.